And welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Homeschool father of five. And been part of the homeschool movement for a long time. My folks homeschooled us back in the 1960s and 1970s. I matriculated to a junior college in 1981, I think it was, 1983, to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Student body president my senior year there, and then eventually off to the corporate world, and then to ministry. And right about 1999, I kicked off into ministry, and the rest is history. Well, friends, today we're going to talk a little bit about homeschooling and getting out there and getting into the university world. We do talk about entrepreneurism from time to time, but we also talk about the dual track. There are two tracks. There's the entrepreneur track, but there's also the college corporate track, and the importance of college for preparing us for the calling that God has in our lives. College does fit into the equation at points, and does secular college, secular university fit into the equation for Christian families? And it does, here and there. Now, granted, I usually say when you head off to Nebs University or Nebuchadnezzar's University, pack your vegetables. And I use that in a metaphoric sense because, you know, you just can't take everything hook, line, and sinker that Neb is teaching you down at Nebs University. And so we have a specimen today on this edition of the program. Joshua Abitoy is a friend of, his family's a friend of ours and has been since, well, 1988, I think, is when I ran into his father, and they were homeschooling back then, back before we were married. My wife and I were married in, I think, 1990, and the Abitoys were homeschooling back in the 1980s, and they have five children, and Joshua Abitoy is now a graduate and also attending Harvard Law School, and he now joins me on the Generations Broadcast. Joshua, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to talk to you today.
Joshua, you made it to Harvard Law School. That's kind of a big deal, isn't it? I mean, you know, by the time you make it to Harvard Law School, you know, that's like the biggest law school in the country, I think, isn't it?
Well, it's one of the better ones. Yale's actually number one.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Of a little bit of resentment for some of the Harvard professors, but Yeah, it's an incredible opportunity. I worked hard to get in there. I'm standing on the work of, you know, what my parents had invested into my life through my early childhood education, and thinking about how to not squander the incredible opportunity that the Lord's given me, and to use the opportunities that I'll have to make a difference for His church.
Now, how did you wind up pursuing law? This was not your first, you know, intention, was it?
No, absolutely not. Coming out of college, I had all these analytical inclinations. I love doing research, and I thought for a bit that I would go into academia, actually. Uh-huh. And I got a master's degree in Washington, D.C. at the Catholic University. Okay. And was really enjoyed academia. But during that time, I was being mentored by several friends that I knew through my church in D.C., who were also partners at law firms there and working on Supreme Court cases. And they would talk to me about the cases and, you know, the work that they were doing. Some of them were working on cases such as the Affordable Care Act, which the decision came out last year for that, which was highly controversial.
Yeah.
And so by learning from them and speaking with them, I really began to realize that, you know, that the law was a great fit for the inclinations that God had given me, and having been at school for 7 months now, I can say I think that's definitely the case.
Okay, and you know what? We do need good, godly Christian lawyers. My guess is the battles are just going to heat up in the years to come.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely, and you can see them going on even right now. I mean, there's over 100 cases nationwide of different Christian companies and organizations that are suing the federal government, especially HHS,
yes,
over
right.
the contraceptive mandate, which is part of the new healthcare law that requires Christian organizations to provide funding for their employees to get contraceptive services. So that's one of the big legal battles that's going on right now. And then the other really big one would be the case with the Proposition 8 from California, which wanted to restrict marriage to between a man and a woman. Those two are big battles, and yes, I definitely see a lot more coming in the future.
Do you think there are certain kinds of people that are called to the front lines of the battle? I mean, they just want to be there?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Is that you?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. It just gets your blood going in the morning.
It does. It does, and even more so. I think that having entered Harvard Law School, where I have a lot of friends.
Mm-hmm.
I respect my colleagues a lot, but I have a lot of fundamental disagreements with them, and they think a lot of my views on things are just downright strange and different.
Yeah.
And that's really sharpened me.
Sure.
It's really made me, refocus on the things that, that I believe are true.
Yeah.
And, especially causes like, the pro-life cause and, traditional Christian understanding of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely reaffirmed to me the importance of, of us as Christians articulating a queer view of the ethical foundation of our beliefs for those things. And
what does the student body look like at Harvard Law School, Joshua? Are you the only guy, or is there a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that hang out there too?
there's actually many of us.
Okay.
I was very surprised. There's 1,500 students overall at Harvard Law School.
Okay.
My estimation would say that there are about 20 to 30 Christians, very and practicing Christians at Harvard Law School, most of whom are politically conservative, and are there to learn legal education, to glorify God with their careers, including maybe doing things like protecting Christian institutions, or maybe taking up a cause that they believe to be, biblical and ethical.
Do you run into any ex-homeschool graduates?
Yeah. Oh, yep. Some of my best friends there are homeschoolers. Yeah, several come through the Patrick Henry pipeline, which Patrick Henry is, really producing a lot of, young college graduates who go into top law schools and are really, they've only been around for 10 years, but, in 30 years, Patrick Henry is going to have alumni all over positions of leadership in every field.
That's pretty impressive. That's really impressive. That's a really good report on what Mike Ferris have done over the years, and we commend him for his commitment to liberty and for the battles that he has fought. So, yeah, that's good. Well, as you sit in the classes, I'm sure there are false ideas flying around. Of course, false ideas fly around everywhere. So kind of got to be on your guard, whether you're in the movie theater or at Harvard Law School in the classrooms. Is there anything more challenging about the secular academic environment than anywhere else, do you think?
I do. Absolutely. Like you said, you can have or not know, why you believe what you believe. But I think that is a little bit heightened when you're surrounded by, frankly, extremely intelligent people who are also very persuasive. They care about what they say. They truly believe what they say. And so if you don't have a good grounding, ethical teachings of Christianity, it would be very easy, I think, to, be discouraged by the fact that you are outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe think, what all these people, maybe they know something that I don't, So
mm-hmm.
absolutely, it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It varies from course to course and, according to the topic. Some things are very value-laden, and then other things, are very, I think, much more technical and less susceptible to, the influence of values. But, I will say, after I said all of that, I'm very clear, I think, with friendships that I've made when speaking in class, hey, these are my presuppositions. These are the values that I hold to, and things aren't really, you're not going to get critiqued for holding to those things because, it's not the sort of proposition that somebody can just defeat, purely rationally, and they're certainly not looking to do that in class.
Yeah.
So if you put your cards on the table, people may not like it, they may not, agree with you, but you'll get a level of respect at least.
Okay, so you can respectfully disagree with your teacher from time to time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Not a lot of persecution
and
on
I
that
do.
Front. Yeah. And you do. Okay. Okay. Have you thought about this issue of separatism versus Puritanism? I bring this up from time to time where, you know, some people are separating from the world. And that's sort of what homeschoolers are accused of doing from time to time. But but also the issue of getting out there and working in the world, changing the world, but not necessarily being of the world system. I mean, can you appreciate the tension there? And have you
Absolutely.
Worked that through in your own mind?
Well, you know, I can't say that I've worked it through. I think a lot of people much wiser than me still really go back and forth on this tension.
Yeah.
I'll just give you a little bit of my own reflections on the subject and in relation to what I think about what I do with my career. And, you know, there's two really big categories, I think, of, you know, where Christians can take action in society right now. And one would be to focus their efforts and, you know, and their talents on preservation and strengthening of Christian institutions,
okay.
the churches. And that would be really treating, essentially that would be that, you know, you're going to be wasting your efforts by working, you know, in more culture at large, trying to affect change through, you know, political action or through, you know, teaching in the secular academic world. And then obviously the opposite of that would be to say, you know, you're going to spend your career and your efforts, you know, out in the public sphere and maybe, you know, making policy arguments, trying to get people to vote for certain bills and doing things, you know, in the public arena, not necessarily in a way that affects specifically Christian institutions, even though you have Christian beliefs underlying, you know, your actions. And, you know, those two things are things that I really think a lot about, and I think it's going to take some wisdom and discernment to decide what is better for Christians to, you know, to work on, and that would include me. You know, I think that there comes a point when the public square is so closed off to the exercise of Christian belief that, you know, that it really would not be helpful or possible for Christians to, you know, operate in the public square as much, and then they should focus their efforts on private institutions. That's something that I'm thinking through, and honestly, you know, things could change, maybe for the better or for the worse.
You know, one of the things that I would really encourage people to do, though, is to understand that these are strategic questions, and let's respect each other if people choose to take different approaches and God calls them
Absolutely.
To different fields of engagement. I think that's really, really critical. We got to respect one another in where we're called to get involved. I really think the battles to preserve the church, though, and Christian institutions are number one. And I use Joseph, Daniel, and Esther as examples here. They didn't really get involved in the, you know, homosexual and abortion issues going on in Babylon and Persia as much as they were involved in protecting God's people. So again, you know, not saying that we don't get out there and try to change laws when we can, when we've got some political influence and opportunity to accomplish that. But in lieu of not having that political opportunity and influence, perhaps the best thing to do is just to do everything we can to protect God's people, such that, you know, pastors aren't thrown in jail for preaching against some particular politically correct sin of the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just, I completely agree. And just to be clear, I think that from where things are headed right now, I think that, you know, what you just said is becoming more and more kind of the operative place for Christians to put their time and their efforts.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, in the future for political action, I think there's some room for optimism, you know, especially on the state level.
Good.
Where there's a lot more flexibility and where, you know, a state like where I'm from, for instance, Tennessee, you know, mainstream politicians can make arguments supported by, you know, biblical propositions. They can, I think, you know, there's a lot of room for them to pass very good and just laws. And so I think that I do see some room for sort of optimism and, you know, maybe room for action, especially on the state level. But I, you know, absolutely agree with your thoughts on that.
As you think about your own life, Joshua, what's the vision? You know, what's driving you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Yes. Well, you know, what I really want to do, and, you know, we've already discussed this, is, you know, protect and guard Christian institutions, but not just protect and guard. That sounds very defensive, but help them grow. You know, I worked for an organization in D.C. for a while that supported Christian colleges and universities. And, you know, I would like to see, I would really, especially Christian colleges and universities, something that I know a lot about, I would really like to see them prosper. So, you know, eventually in my career, I'd like to get into, you know, academic leadership, or even if it's not maybe taking a position in university, finding ways to, you know, educate Christians and give them, you know, the knowledge that they need to live well, to live righteously, and to, you know, protect their freedoms, and to think strategically about the Christian community long term.
Yeah. As you, if you had an opportunity to talk to a group of, say, 100 kids thinking about attending Harvard Law School or a secular university of some sort, Joshua, what would you tell them? What do you think? How do you think Christians ought to behave / excel in the secular university today?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is tell them what they're in for. I would, you know, I'd like to explain that, you know, especially on where they're coming from, there's going to be, you know, value clashes just nonstop in the classroom, in their social life, with friends at school. That could be one of the biggest adjustments, to be honest, is the not only what you hear in the classroom, but the lifestyle of what students lead outside of the classroom. And
let me guess, it's not exactly what they were doing in 1689 at Harvard College.
That I would say that's a safe that's a safe bet. Yeah, so I would try to tell, you know, people considering doing that to know what they're in for. You know, be fully equipped and just be sure that, you know, that that you're not going to be susceptible to, you know, maybe moral change from being around a different group of people than what you're used to being around. And then also just that you're grounded intellectually, you know, that you're secure in the historic teachings of Christianity, you know, not just the basics, but then also sort of, you know, what the Bible and Christian thinkers have had to say about social issues and political issues, you know, and just, yeah, absolutely, you've got to be grounded, because if you're not...
I've got an excellent little book called Apostate coming out in just a couple of weeks, Joshua,
and
talks about the apostasy of all the great philosophers from the 1600s onwards, and the cultural differences that came about, but I tie in a lot of history to it so that you can see in pretty plain colors what happened as Christian values, Christian morals, Christian epistemology was assaulted by these humanist forces coming out of the Enlightenment. So, you know, I'm hoping that this book will be used by thousands of young people preparing for college, whether secular or Christian college. So that's kind of the goal for this book. We're also attaching it to a high school level curriculum and publishing through Apologia Press this year. So we're pretty excited about that. What you're saying about being prepared historically, apologetically, understanding what the biblical worldview is, so very, very important. I'm not against Christians out there doing battle. I'm against people going out there into that dog eat dog world dressed out in milkbone underwear. That's what I'm opposed to.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I've seen it. You know, I've definitely seen a lot of friends who started out in one place and, you know, and ended up in another because of, you know, a lack of, you know, of kind of critically thinking through and accepting the basic presuppositions of the Christian faith.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about your own background for a moment. You were homeschooled back in the 1980s, 1990s. Your parents did a great job. I know them. But just give us a little bit about your preparation and what really worked.
Well, yeah, it all worked. Some of it I liked more at the time than other things. So, you know, both of my parents are, you know, kind of incredible, you know, thinkers and both my mom and dad, you know, made the decision to not have a TV in the house.
Yeah.
And that, honestly, that may have been one of the single most important things in my early childhood, because it, you know, it forced me to read for entertainment. And, you know, there were lots of good books in the house lying around, and very often that was my default, sometimes even at the expense of doing my other schoolwork. You know, I would love reading so much, and that was really the primary educational factor, I think, in my life. And then obviously, you know, my dad was quite the disciplinarian in teaching mathematics to me. He was my math teacher from high school on, and very tough. I know it must have been tough for him, because it was tough for me, and so I know he was certainly you know, working hard to keep me on a schedule and make sure I did everything. But you know, I think that that discipline was essential in formulating kind of my mental habits before I went to college.
You know, and as I think about Christians in the college sphere or in the marketplace, Christians really ought to be exemplary. I mean, okay, they might disagree with the worldview issues flying around in the academy, but shouldn't they be the ones turning their homework in on time? Shouldn't they be the one who put the extra effort into the 45-page paper? Shouldn't they be the ones that aren't partying on Friday night, but are doing the work, exercising the disciplines, because they're doing it for God? They're doing it for the glory of God, and hopefully they've been trained to do that in their home with their parents. So, you know, the disciplines tie into this. I mean, that's one thing I've learned, is you can be a good Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and receive some pretty neat little promotions in Nebuchadnezzar's administration if you're the kind of guy that does the work and is actually the productive student or the productive employee in the system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that something that I've sort of, you know, realized in my time in school at Harvard so far is just that, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity that has been given to me, and I feel a sense of, you know, of sort of entrustment from the Lord to me with this, you know, this thing, this ability to go to this school. And, you know, it's certainly, along with the challenges, it gives great opportunities to meet, you know, incredible people. It will open up a lot of doors to me. But, you know, that would all be a waste if I were to squander it. And so, you know, I really thank the Lord that He's kept it at the front of my mind that, you know, you are going to school here for a reason. And you know, don't lose sight of that. And don't do a half-hearted job either. You know, like Ecclesiastes says, you know, whatever your hands, you know, whatever you put your hands to, do it mightily. And,
Joshua, as you look back at the spiritual training that your parents gave you in the house, I mean, right now you're standing strong, you're standing firm for the faith. You know, you've seen others sort of come and go. Is there something that your parents did? I mean, was there a sort of home environment that they provided for you that developed that firm foundation and enabled you to stand strong when you made it to Harvard Law School?
Yeah, there were a lot of things. I mean, I was submersed in the Word, you know, both at church and then just with my family from a very early age. So I knew Scripture very, very well at a very young age. And then, you know, I saw my family really living the Christian faith out, you know, in such a way that I could never question, you know, but that, you know, the Christian faith was true, and that, you know, I had seen, you know, Christ's love for us, you know, displayed by my parents and how they brought us up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those two things really, you know, stuck with me, you know, from then until, especially, you know, the knowledge of God's Word and just at different challenging times in my own life. You know, I'll remember, you know, verses that were taught to me by my mom when I was 5 years old, you know, popping into.
Yeah, and forget what this humanist, Nazi, socialist professor is telling me right now. What mommy told me and taught me in that Bible verse still stands as the epistemological authority in this classroom.
Absolutely.
I love it. Love it. Do your mother and father stay in contact with you to this point? Is there still some relationship there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're very, very close. Talk every weekend and sometimes more than that. So, yeah, they've been incredibly supportive of, you know, of me going to school and really, you know, just continue to, you know, offer advice and wisdom and guidance and just, and, you know, now also just a big source of encouragement. And, yeah, so they're really through and pray through, you know, what the future holds after school.
Well, Joshua, we're out of time, but we want to wish you the best and pray the best for you. May God continue to give you a special wisdom, an ability to understand what's happening at the school and to prepare you for what he has in the future. And let's stay in touch and appreciate the time you've taken with us today.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Well, there it is, my friends. Just a little vision for you. A young man with vision, actually accomplishing something for the kingdom of God. And with a vision to do something significant for the cause of righteousness. I mean, you know, you hope that every single young man has some sense of calling and direction, and he's going to accomplish those things for the glory of God. That's my hope. And there's fewer and fewer young men who are graduating from their homeschools, private schools, public schools with that kind of purpose, vision, direction. And I just hope that that more and more young men catch a vision. All right, my friends, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.